You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, science writer Carl Zimmer is with us to give us the latest answers to the question, what is life? Take a tour of the cutting edge of biology, from viruses in nature to life-like substances created in labs. First, the last time the Milwaukee Bucks were in the NBA Finals, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was the star of the team and a prominent civil rights advocate while playing in the city. Now, nearly 50 years later, the Bucks are back in the finals for the first time, but Kareen Hess reports that the players and their organization see the same problems in Milwaukee.
In April 1974, as the Milwaukee Bucks were looking ahead to the National Basketball Finals, team star Kareem Abdul-Jabbar told a reporter being a black American meant being a second-class citizen.
All the benefits of American society has been denied to us, and that has to be changed.
It wasn't the first time Abdul-Jabbar called for social justice when he was in Milwaukee, and over the last year, the Milwaukee Bucks have done it again. Last summer, team members marched with Black Lives Matter protesters. Then they initiated an NBA playoffs boycott to protest the police shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha. Former Bucks player Wesley Matthews said at the time, police killings of black men took a heavy toll.
We saw an opportunity to show that we're human, to show that this is visibly and emotionally and physically impactful, even though we are here in a bubble.
Over the last 50 years, the Bucks and downtown Milwaukee have been on the rebound. The downtown Deer District has attracted more than 20,000 fans a night during the playoffs and finals. But the benefits for downtown business people largely have not extended to Milwaukee's black community. There aren't many good jobs. Incarceration rates are some of the highest in the nation, and schools are racially segregated.
The Bucks were playing great basketball, and Jabbar was the best player on earth. He called attention to these issues.
That's Mark Levine, professor emeritus of urban studies at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee.
Here we are 50 years later, where on most indicators, the situation for African Americans in Milwaukee is worse than it was when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar played here.
Levine recently looked at racial inequality measures and found black median household income in Milwaukee has declined by 30% since 1979. Milwaukee has the second lowest black homeownership rate among the nation's largest metropolitan areas, and only two-thirds of working-age black males were employed between 2016 and 2018. The unforgiving downsizing of Milwaukee's heavy manufacturing sector that started in the 1970s hit the city's black middle-class community the hardest, and parts of the city never recovered. Kevler Johnson is the city's Common Council president. He says without a foundation of education and employment, the city has nothing to stand on.
Former Mayor John Norquist used to say that you can't build a city on pity. And you certainly can't build a city without those two things as a foundation.
Levine says extreme segregation in Milwaukee is one of the biggest hurdles to build equitable communities. Howard Fuller is a longtime social justice advocate and retired professor. He says we have to acknowledge that Milwaukee residents don't all experience the city in the same way.
You know, you want to go down there to the Deer District and jump up and down and all that, fine. That's cool. But to act like that has meaning for the vast majority of poor black people who live in this city, that's just fantasy.
Arvid Gopal-Rumpnam heads social justice programs for the Bucks. He's frustrated by the lack of progress for people of color, but thinks this finals run is a great opportunity for the city.
With that frustration, there is a multitude of incredible pockets of positivity and programs and efforts that are just incredibly enhancing the community. And those are the ones we want to keep pushing.
Abdul-Jabbar's 2016 book, Writings on the Wall, includes a passage that could apply to the last 50 years in Milwaukee. He writes, when it comes to securing equal opportunity to thrive, African Americans must grasp it in the here and now, or what's a constitution for? The problem is the longer that we continue to deny the problem exists, the longer it takes to solve it. Corrine Hess, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Now, the Department of Defense is making moves to address the National Guard's longstanding problem with sexual assault. Last month, the Defense Department Task Force put out a list of recommended reforms for how the Guard handles sexual assault cases. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said the agency would come up with a plan to implement and fund the proposed changes. But critics say change within the National Guard is going to be an uphill battle, given the organization's history and its unique bureaucratic structure, or really structures. And in Wisconsin, lawmakers have stalled on addressing the State Guard's own sexual assault problems in spite of support from Governor Evers and the Guard itself. We're talking now about sexual assault in the National Guard in Wisconsin and around the country. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been following this story? What actions do you want to see from federal and or state governments when it comes to the National Guard and how it's handled sexual assault cases? Are you or have you been a member of the National Guard? Do you have thoughts on this issue? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Caitlin Farrell is an investigative reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Caitlin, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You've been following these issues for quite a while now, Caitlin. You've been on the show a couple times already to talk about it. Before we dig into these new efforts, can you give us a sense of the scope of the National Guard sexual assault problem?
Sure. So, well, honestly, part of the problem is I think that it's really difficult to know the true scope of the problem in the National Guard. Unlike active duty forces, which are, you know, folks that serve full time in the Army, the Navy, the Marine Corps, the National Guard is a really distinct combat force, and it's spread out across all 50 states and four U.S. territories in the District of Columbia. And because of that, and there's this kind of unique state-federal overlap, it's difficult to really know and to get real numbers on how prevalent sexual assault is. What we do know is that the little amount of data that the states do report to the federal government on this issue has increased each year. Some of the most recent reports have been the highest on record. And so we know that it continues to be a problem, but I think, you know, good quality data along with a variety of other issues is a particular challenge for really understanding the problem in the National Guard as opposed to other active duty forces.
In your reporting, Caitlin, you've found a number of individual stories of women who are victims of sexual assault facing retaliation. Then when they report it, you've been reporting on this for years in Wisconsin. Some of your latest reporting reaches out to West Virginia and elsewhere in the country. Do you see a pattern of mishandling when someone comes forward with an allegation of assault?
In the cases that I've looked at, unfortunately, yes, I do. A lot of times the pattern that I've seen in the National Guard particularly is really the same. And I think even, you know, more recent folks that have come forward and talked to me about it, I think the pattern just continues to perpetuate itself. And so that's in part, I think, what was noteworthy to me about this latest DOD task force and some of the recommendations that came out on that is because you know, they're calling for some really specific and targeted reforms at the Guard. And when we see the same patterns and a lot of the kind of cover up that happens and has been written about in a variety of states in the National Guard over the last couple decades, it's nice to see, you know, some renewed attention come onto the Guard from the federal level. But yeah. The patterns are there, and unfortunately, they seem to just keep perpetuating themselves.
One thing that complicates this is, okay, if the Pentagon sees a problem in active duty military, Army, Navy, and so on, and they do, there's just one Army, so they can impose rules on the top. As you mentioned, there's 50-some National Guard units. Who in a particular state, say, has to decide to make a change and implement these recommendations?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that's definitely something that really complicates reform efforts in the Guard particularly. And so it can be a two-pronged approach. And so I think that that fundamental change would really need to happen with both state reform. So that would mean that state lawmakers here in Wisconsin and other states would change our state law and our military justice code. Each state has one. Wisconsin has the Wisconsin Code of Military Justice. And so state lawmakers here could choose to update our code to align it with the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which is the central code that active duty forces use when prosecuting military crimes. So that would be, I think, a really important foremost change. But there are other things that could happen at the federal level when it comes to funding and routine inspections and empowering or equipping the National Guard Bureau, which has some degree of oversight, though it does not regulate the Guard, to come in and try to do more routine checks. And so there's sort of levers at, I think, both levels of government, if that makes sense. But I think that really meaningful reform would also have to happen at the state level as well.
Talking to Caitlin Farrell, investigative reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She's talking to us about potential federal reforms and possible state reforms when it comes to how the National Guard deals with sexual assault. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about what's been going on in the National Guard in Wisconsin, around the country? Are you watching these possible reforms closely? Do you have experience in the National Guard yourself? Do you think change needs to happen? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigative reporter Caitlin Farrell. She's telling us about proposed changes when it comes to the way that the National Guard deals with sexual assault cases and how likely it is those changes will be implemented. Possible changes at the federal and state level. You could join in with your thoughts, comments, questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to a caller now. Kevin is with us in Baraboo. Kevin, hi.
Hello.
Hi, what'd you want to bring up, Kevin?
Well, my question to the guest speaker would be, the Uniform Code of Military Justice on the federal level is mimicked by the Wisconsin Military Code of Justice. So what reform would you like to see between the two? As well as, are you aware of all the additional duty responsibilities that soldiers have when it comes to sexual assault training, and the multi-tiers that they have within the Wisconsin National Guard to prevent this from happening? Thank you.
Kevin, thanks for the call. Caitlin?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, yeah, it's true. The Wisconsin Code of Military Justice is modeled to some extent from UCMJ. I think one thing that there has been room for updates on that is that the UCMJ has been updated more recently than WCMJ has. The most recent update to our state's code was in 2014. And when the National Guard Bureau came to Wisconsin and released a report about how the state was doing investigations back at the end of 2019, it recommended a series of changes to the code. One of them, I think, was to increase some protections for whistleblowers and folks who are civilian employees covered by some of those federal protections, and also bolster, I think, protections around witnesses. And so the Evers administration, after releasing that report, have agreed with the Guard Bureau and wanting to update some of those specific things. There's also been folks who are calling for updates to the uniform code on the federal level as well, including making sexual harassment a crime. That was a part of this DOD report that just came out. And so there's a lot of discussion about that as well. Right now, sexual harassment, many researchers say is a precursor often to assault, but is not considered a crime under UCMJ. And some folks would like to see that happen. And yeah, the caller's right. Like there are prevention programs that exist in Wisconsin and that come down from the federal level related to directing how folks deal with sexual assault. And there are victim advocates that exist, a SARC, a sexual assault response coordinator. That's a role that exists on the state level. And what this DOD report found that I wrote about just this week really is just that there could be more resources and even more training to make sure that people in the Guard have ample time and resources to really take on those roles fully. I think one challenge for the Guard that just makes it difficult, I think, for good people who serve trying to do well is just that there's a lot of, because they're often a part-time military force, and most folks serve, one weekend a month, it can be difficult, I think, with all the other tasks that they have to really have the time and energy to do all of the things they might need to do when it comes to sexual assault, real prevention and awareness. And so that's what this report really highlighted in many ways, is the need to really bolster prevention. And so yes, much of what he said is accurate in that.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Let's go now to Sandy with us in Madison. Sandy, hi.
Hello there. I was just calling in. You had spoken about a pattern and a repeating pattern, and I was just hoping that you could describe what that pattern is or what that means. I'll take this offline.
Thanks for the call, Sandy. Caitlin, what kind of pattern have you seen in your reporting on what happens when women come forward with allegations of sexual assault?
Yeah, well, you know, in a lot of the cases I've looked at, and, you know, to be clear, there are thousands and thousands of folks that serve in the National Guard in a lot of cases that I haven't reviewed. And so, you know, to be clear, the cases that I've looked at, which I have been reporting on this for several years and across multiple states, but really echoes a lot of what I reported back in March on this topic. I think many folks are fearful of coming forward initially because they think that they're going to face some measure of retaliation or that their report isn't going to be kept confidential. I think depending on the unit that someone's in and where that might be located, I think sometimes the dynamics of the National Guard, it is good in some ways because it feels, what I'm told by folks is that it can feel very familial and like a close-knit, you know, family and group of people. But often that means that people end up finding out about claims even when they're supposed to be confidential. And then if someone does choose to move through the process and really adjudicate their claim, then they've often faced some measure of retaliation. I think the biggest kind of pattern that I've seen, though, as well, and that ends up being really difficult, I think, to pinpoint, is just what happens to the leaders and the unit commanders and then folks above those unit commanders who really enable this kind of stuff to happen. In many of the cases I've looked at, folks, commanders who either are perpetrators or allow this and don't really go after it aggressively often retire. And then it's really difficult, you know, for anything more to happen to them when they retire with a title and often a pension and military benefits. And so those are some of the hallmarks of the patterns that I see when I've looked at this in just the cases that I've looked at.
Thanks for that call, Sandy. We're talking to Caitlin Farrell from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at the National Guard in Wisconsin and around the country and calls for changes in how it deals with allegations of sexual assault. Caitlin, you've mentioned a couple times possible changes here in the state. From your reporting, I understand the state legislature would have to be involved in a lot of that. Is that something that's in the works?
Yeah, you know, to be honest, I'm not quite sure at this point. I've tried to sort of nail that down, and I haven't been able to get any lawmakers in leadership positions here in the state to give me any insight on that. The Wisconsin National Guard has told me that they have had preliminary discussions with lawmakers here and that they're in favor of updating our code. Our new Adjutant General Paul Knapp, who took over after that NGD report came out, has said, you know, on WPR too, that he's made a lot of changes and that they support continuing to update our code and to aggressively go after sexual assault here. But I've seen no movement in the legislature from those who have power to make change to actually move a bill. And so, you know, I'll note that I've been reporting on this for a while, and I'm going to continue to do that. And so hopefully, you know, I'm going to continue to pursue and ask questions on that. But the short answer is that no, I've seen no significant movement when it comes to a lawmaker actually stepping forward on this and taking point on it here.
Then at the federal level, you mentioned the National Guard Bureau, which does something with National Guards around the country, but is not, I guess, in charge of them. Can you talk about the role that group, that organization could play in reform?
Right. So, yeah, the National Guard Bureau, I think, can be somewhat tricky to, they do something, as you mentioned. A good way to put it, I think, kind of is that they act a bit as a referee. And so they're an administrative organization, but they don't regulate the Guard, because the Guard in each state really answers only to the governor of that state, and they are, you know, state militias. And so, however, the National Guard Bureau does follow regulations and sort of administer both the Army and Air Force components and the rules that each of those branches have. And they provide, you know, an oversight role when it comes to investigating allegations of sexual assault in cases where the victim wants that to happen. And so what is supposed to happen is that states send cases or reports of sexual assault to the Guard Bureau, which is supposed to be more of a third party, more independent place with investigators that have expertise in this. And so, you know, what could happen in other states is similar to what did end up happening here. I think this DOD report does recommend that investigators from the Guard Bureau do more routine inspections or audits to make sure that guards are following federal rules. You know, for over a decade here in Wisconsin, our Guard, prior to the new Adjutant General coming in, just had not been following federal rules or regulations at all. And so the fact that that's able to persist here for over a decade and no one noticed or did anything about it, I think folks see as a problem. And so having, you know, the Guard Bureau come in and more proactively really monitor that, I think is something that they could do.
Just briefly, Caitlin, we've got these recommendations now for the Defense Department. What are you watching for next for how and if they get implemented?
Sure. So according to the Secretary of Defense, the department now is working, they're on a 60-day timeline looking at the feasibility of implementing some of these recommendations. And so I'll note that the COD task force actually covered all military branches, but did highlight the Guard within it. And so I'll be looking to see what happens in this 60-day time period, and be looking for the document that's created in the implementation plan. And I think then we'll have a clearer idea of just which recommendations specifically are going to be implemented and what that might look like.
Caitlin, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Caitlin Farrell is an investigative reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She joined us to talk about sexual assault in the National Guard and new recommendations from the Department of Defense.